As you know, I like my data, and the data is increasingly pointing to the idea that this virus is a man-made deal, and that's important for you to know. And as well, we've got a lot of information to share with you around that. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Chris Martinson here with your daily SARS-CoV-2 update, a.k.a. the Honey Badger virus. Today is May 12th, 2020. This is day 110 of our reporting, and I'm titling this one COVID, Natural or Man-Made, and we're going to put the evidence out there, and we don't have anything super definitive to say yes or no this way or that way, but I can tell you that anybody who is saying that this is definitively from nature is absolutely not being completely open and honest. All right, let's move on. Here's an article that came out in NBC News, and it read here about a possibility of a major security incident at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Report says cell phone data suggests October shutdown at the Wuhan lab. And don't listen, I'm going to tear this little butt apart. But experts are skeptical. We're going to talk about these experts today. I'm very disappointed in many of them, got to be honest. This comes to us from May 8th, and it says a private analysis of cell phone location data purports to show that a high-security Wuhan laboratory studying coronaviruses shut down in October. Three sources briefed on the matter told NBC News. U.S. spy agencies are reviewing the document, but intelligence analysts examined and couldn't confirm a similar theory previously, two senior officials say. So that's all a little mealy. Okay, unnamed, so they just say intelligence analysts couldn't confirm and all of this. So that doesn't mean that they didn't have similar data or that it didn't make sense. It's just they could have their own reasons for not wanting to confirm a theory. So that's not really a rebuttal. It sounds like one, but it's not. In official circles, that's not how that works. The report obtained by the London-based NBC News Verification Unit says there was no cell phone activity in a high-security portion of the Wuhan Institute of Virology from October 7th through October 24th, 2019, and that there may have been a hazardous event sometime between October 6th and 11th, okay? This continues from that article. The first known case of coronavirus in China has been traced to November 17th, but some researchers are beginning to question that timeline given that a case has been documented in France in December, and that one was with actual a PCR test. Excuse me. So that is actually very concerning. How did that case get to France? And by the way, that was in a fishmonger with no travel to China. So there has to be a preceding case before that, because remember, this virus has a 5 to 7 day incubation period on average, as long as 14 days, maybe as long as 27 days. We don't know, but at least 5 to 7 days. So that would mean if you had somebody who had it in December, they had to have gotten it from someone else. And that pushes the timeline way back, maybe to somewhere around October 6th to 11th. The document says its analysis suggests the pandemic began earlier than initially reported and supports the release of COVID-19 at the WIV. Possibly. Let's take a look at that data real quick. So this is what they did. They can get this data publicly somehow. I don't know how to do it, but people can do this. And they're looking at devices that are all around the Wuhan Institute. So the Wuhan Institute's right here and in red. And here are all the roads around it, and they're all lit up. From July through March, this is what average traffic looks like on all these roads. These things are just lit up like Christmas trees. But from October 14th to 19th here, they're showing a picture. There's nothing going on. So they had very consistent traffic in the months prior to October. Beginning October 11th, there was substantial decrease in activity. The last time a device is active prior to October 11th is October 6th. So there's a whole dark window where there's nothing going on for those 5 days. So that's the window of the incident they're talking about. And as well, the roads were all closed down all around there at the same time. So this is way before China was blocking Wuhan, was officially even internally publicly admitting that they had any sort of issues going on. And come on. I don't like it when it does that. All right. That's Microsoft very helpfully trying to get me to do something I don't want to do right in the middle of my recording. Thanks, Microsoft. Par for the course, though. All right. The second image, look at this. No traffic in the whole area surrounding the Institute. And it's during this time it's believed that roadblocks were put in place to prevent traffic from coming near the facility. So some sort of event caused all the roads to be closed down right around there, and that's known from cell phone traffic. So that's kind of interesting right there. And then this article goes on to say, but experts are skeptical because experts don't believe that this virus came from nature. I mean, came from a lab. It had natural sources. They don't mention who these experts are, but we've been reviewing them for quite a while. They're all the same cast of characters. And remember, they're all sounding just a little too desperate to me to make this sound like it comes from nature. And in fact, the reason I'm going to burrow back into this whole argument again about is this man-made, is it natural, does it really matter? Does it really matter? Well, it kind of does matter. Because first off, we might say, wow, if it did come from a lab and it was an accidental release and it was a gain-of-function research, we would use that data as sentient individuals to say, we humans should not be doing that sort of research ever again, because obviously we can't be trusted with that stuff. Mistakes happen. You know, you're doing something with a monkey and it's all infected with this awesome virus you just made, and then it bites you. And next thing you know, you got it and you don't want to tell anybody, or, you know, whatever, you know, and so you sneak out. All I'm saying is, if this thing was made in a lab and it escaped, then we shouldn't be doing this sort of research. And if it was made in a lab and somebody intentionally released it, because, I don't know, they were depressed or they're getting divorced or something, or they were just mad at the world for whatever reason, then we shouldn't be doing this sort of research. So that's what I'm on about. And the reason I'm also burrowing down on this is because the scientists involved are saying things that are illogical, that are absolutely untrue in some cases, that are vague to the point of being bordering on lying, that they are lying by omission, by leaving things out. So they're being very evasive. That bothers me. I wish they were being more forthright and more honest. So let's go to this and take a quick peek at what we're talking about. Really interesting article comes out in the Daily Telegraph yesterday, here on May 11th, today being May 12th. The COVID Files, How the Red Army Oversaw Coronavirus Research. Check this out. China's People's Liberation Army has been involved in scientific research co-funded by the Australian government, as well as the U.S. government through the NIH, into the origins of the coronavirus, which has been published in esteemed medical journals. In an explosive revelation, a study co-funded by the Australian Research Council and the Chinese government, and trumpeted by the University of Sydney, is helping to solve the puzzle of how COVID-19 transferred from animals to humans, relied on a key laboratory in an institute in the People's Liberation Army's Academy of Military Medical Sciences to conduct its genetic sequencing and its virus isolation. The director of the Microbiology Institute, Professor Wu Chan Cao, who is thanked in the paper's acknowledgments for his substantial contribution, has the rank of colonel and is a Wuhan Institute of Virology board member, in a clear conflict of interest. So he belongs to the WIV, belongs to the People's Liberation Army, and and is thanked in this particular paper. So carrying on, one of the study's co-authors, Yigang Tong, began working in the same PLA-run Microbiology Institute in 2005. Oh, by the way, people have been working on this stuff for a long time. That's, what, 15 years ago now. The Wuhan Institute of Virology is at the center of a global probe into whether the naturally occurring coronavirus was accidentally released from its laboratory or came from a local wet market. You made an assertion that it's naturally occurring, and then you're setting up, you lead with that, and then you go with the, well, was it accidentally released or did it come from a local wet market, which scientists believe is the most likely scenario. Again, these scientists, which scientists believe, not all of them, by the way, not this one, not a bunch of them, but certainly a very vocal minority of them are very, very, very urgently trying to convince us it either came from a local wet market, maybe accidentally released from a laboratory, but it certainly has a natural source somewhere. We're going to talk about today about how you can't make that claim, not even close. All right. This study is one of two scientific papers on the coronavirus undertaken by University of Sydney virologist and evolutionary biologist Professor Edward Holmes, in conjunction with researchers in China who received funding from the Chinese government. Here's a little qualifier. Professor Holmes, highly regarded in his field and the only Western scientist that was part of the consortium of the Shanghai Public Health Clinical Center and School of Public Health, who first uploaded the genetic sequence of the coronavirus on January 11th. There is no suggestion that Professor Holmes' own contribution to the research project was anything but independent, ethical, and of the highest scientific standards. His work on the papers was funded by Australian grants only. So I guess he didn't get Chinese money. So here we report the identification of SARS-CoV-2 related coronaviruses in Malayan pangolins seized in an anti-smuggling operation in southern China. The Daily Telegraph can reveal that the sequencing and virus isolation on which the study relied was done by laboratories run by the PLA in China. In fine print at the very end of the paper, in the acknowledgement sections, it states, we thank all of these people, and including doing all this stuff here. And by the way, the state key laboratory of pathogen and biosecurity is part of the Beijing Institute of Microbiology and Epidemiology, which sits under the Academy of Military Medical Sciences, which itself is the highest level research institute of the PLA. So their blockbuster here is to say, well, you know, a lot of this research was on coronavirus was also commingled with the People's Liberation Army sort of activities. Okay. And so what's interesting here is at the bottom of all this, they talk about what are the reasons that these scientists are very convinced that this came from the natural source or maybe from the wet market or something like that. They do at the bottom, all the way at the bottom of this article, they do say, well, there are those who suspect such a lab released, and they point to a body of circumstantial evidence. Okay, how about this piece of circumstantial evidence? A January 24 study published in Lancet found that three of the first four cases, including the first known case, didn't provide a documented link to the Wuhan wet market. Well, that would be pretty damaging, wouldn't it? Particularly if you're going to go out here and say, you know, you're looking into a probe as to whether it was, whether it came from a lab or from the local wet market. And your first piece of circumstantial evidence is that the first known case didn't have any documented links to the Wuhan wet market. That's not good for, that's more than circumstantial. That's a pretty strong piece of evidence. The bats that carry the family of coronaviruses linked to the new strain aren't found within 100 miles of Wuhan, but they were studied in both labs. Well, there is that. Yeah. Photos and videos have emerged of researchers at both labs collecting samples from bats without wearing protective gear. So maybe somebody picked it up by a natural mechanism. Possible. That's not a very strong piece of circumstantial evidence for me. A U.S. State Department expert who visited the WIV in 2018 wrote in a cable reported by the Washington Post, which we covered before, during interactions with scientists at the WIV laboratory, diplomats noted the new lab has a serious shortage of appropriately trained technicians and investigators needed to safely operate this high containment laboratory. In diplomatic speak, that's like hair on fire. This place is a smoke bomb ready to turn into a piece of TNT. It's just, this thing's a bomb waiting to blow. Right. So, yeah, that wasn't a good thing to see that this place was being run in such a shoddy manner. All right. According to Senate Intelligence Committee member Tom Cotton, the Chinese military posted its top epidemiologist to the WIV in January. Okay, so the Chinese military brought their people in January there. The Shanghai laboratory where researchers published the world's first genome sequence of the coronavirus was shut down on January 12th. Whoops. And according to U.S. intelligence assessments, including one published by the Department of Homeland Security, the Chinese government initially covered up the severity of the outbreaks. That's kind of guilty sounding. Government officials threatened doctors who warned their colleagues about the virus, weren't candid about human-to-human transmission, and included asked the WHO to sit on that information, which they did, and still haven't provided virus samples to researchers. But despite all that, most scientists and researchers believe natural animal-to-human transmission is the most likely scenario. So let's take that apart. Let's just take that apart. And we're just going to use logic and data. I could be wrong. Hey, I could be right. Nobody knows. But we're going to go through the data and see where it takes us. So let's turn now to this Professor Holmes, who was just cited in that article. Here's a statement from Professor Edward Holmes on SARS-CoV-2. This comes to us direct from the University of Sydney, which was quoted in that article up there. This comes out on April 16th. On the origins of the virus that causes COVID-19, here's where he leads off by saying, unfounded speculation on the origins of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. What do you mean unfounded speculation? Unfounded. unfounded speculation. Well, that's pretty strong language. Founded speculation, I guess, would be, hey, I've got some data. Here's some data that is founded on at least some data. And it's not speculation if it's actual data that you can source and you can back up and is logical. So there's also, besides unfounded speculation, there's also solid data that we're going to present here today. Unfounded speculation on the origins of the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19 has prompted the following statement from Professor Holmes, who was involved in the mapping of the genome of the virus. Here he is. There is no evidence that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19 in humans, originated in a laboratory in Wuhan, China. Okay. There's also no evidence that it came from nature, because do you have 100% identical genetic match from a natural host where you've characterized the host reservoir? Nope. So that's equal weight. We'll give that a 50-50. There's a 50% chance that it came from nature and a 50% chance it came from a lab, because they both have no evidence. He continues, coronaviruses like SARS-CoV-2 are commonly found in wildlife species and frequently jump to new hosts. Okay, I would add to that, coronaviruses like SARS-CoV-2 are also commonly found in laboratories and are routinely experimented on, including gain of function, chimeric swap sections out and back and forth and all sorts of other stuff. So that's also true. This is also the most likely explanation for the origin of SARS-CoV-2. Okay, an assessment is something based on data. An assertion is a claim you make where you don't really have anything to back that up. This right here, this is an assertion. So this person is asserting that the most likely explanation for the origin of SARS-CoV-2 is that you can find these things out in nature. That's his entire logic train. Hey, we find coronaviruses like this in wildlife species. Therefore, that's the most likely explanation. And we'd have to define what most likely means. Is that 99%, 82%? Where are you at on this, Ohms? Eddie, we need to know. The closest known relative of SARS-CoV-2 is a bat virus named RAT-TG13, which was kept at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Oh, yeah, so there is that, right? Right, Eddie? How about that? There is some unfounded speculation that this virus was the origin of SARS-CoV-2. However, RAT-TG13 was sampled from a different province of China to where COVID-19 first appeared. Well, hold on. That's actually supporting the lab statement. He's trying to say unfounded speculation, because, see, he's only focused on the idea that this must have come from nature. Therefore, he's right. If it came from nature, it would be really bizarre to find RAT-TG13 being the source of COVID-19, because they're entirely different places. But remember, Mr. Holmes, RAT-TG13 was in the Wuhan Institute of Virology labs. That's where it was. It was sampled and brought to those labs where COVID-19 first appeared. Right? Am I right? I'm right. Two, the level of genome sequence divergence between SARS-CoV-2 and RAT-TG13 is equivalent to an average of 50 years and at least 20 years of evolutionary change. You know what Eddie's leaving out here is that you can accomplish decades of evolutionary change in a lab in a matter of days or weeks by doing serial passages of these viruses through cell culture lines. He's absolutely right. If this thing was out in nature, RAT-TG13 is very divergent. Although it is highly, highly similar, but it's too divergent to have simply come from nature. So to me, he's saying this exactly backwards from how I would look at it. I look at it as saying RAT-TG13 is very, very close to COVID-19, and the kinds of divergence, sequence divergences we see can be forced in the lab and routinely are by virologists studying virus evolution, studying virus gain of function, all of that stuff. Here's the conclusion. Hence, SARS-CoV-2 was not derived from RAT-TG13. It all sounds very authoritative, but it's actually 100% bullshit, because you can look at this entirely different way. And he knows that. I'm going to show you the data why he knows that. Okay. In addition, we know that viruses related to SARS-CoV-2 are also found in pangolins. This suggests other wildlife species are likely to carry relatives of SARS-CoV-2. All right, we're going to go right through that data because it's super interesting, but this is dissembling of the highest order. I'm going to call it BS, actually. Just got to do that, because that's junk. That's literally junk. And it offends me. As a scientist, it offends me. If you're going to use logic and build to a conclusion like hence means I've given you, supposition A, supposition B. I've built my logic. Hence is a conclusion. He didn't build anything with this. Those, that one and that two, you can flip those exactly around and make a case that it came from a lab. But at any rate, brings this to mind, Professor Holmes. It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his job depends on not understanding it. So let's see if we can help here. First, here is this paper. By the way, there's a bunch of people here with those PLA, People's Liberation Army connections that were just mentioned in that prior article. Here's Professor Holmes right here. And let's see who was mentioned in that article. It was... Oh, yeah. I think it was Yi Gang Tong was mentioned in there. At any rate, this just came out on March 26. It was received in February. So this is kind of interesting. And this is all about identifying SARS-CoV-2 related coronaviruses in Malayan pangolins. So a big, long paper. I dug through it as much as I can. I'm going to show you some data out of it that's pretty intriguing. First up, here's a big, don't worry, I'm going to decode this whole thing. We're going to spend a little time on this. So check this out. Here's original SARS-CoV in the top line. And each one of these letters is an amino acid. And here we're going across the spike protein. And as you go across this spike protein, you get to, if, I don't know if you, how easy this is to see, but there are these, here's, there's a red box around this chunk of letters right here. And there's a red box here, and here, and here, and here. There's five red boxes, and those five red boxes represent the parts of this spike protein, when you fold the whole thing up, that actually interacts with the ACE2 receptor. And those five amino acids are really highly critically important, because if you change one of them, the chance of that binding to human ACE2 goes away. So this is where they go to look right away, is in the spike protein, and they're comparing SARS-CoV to SARS-CoV-2, this pangolin cove, they've got this rat TG one that we've been talking about. There's a different pangolin. And here's a sort of related bat coronavirus, ZZ45. And so we're looking across, this is a whole chunk of amino acids that occupy this set of positions in the spike protein up to position 367. And then here's the whole chunk that takes us up to 417. And here's the whole chunk that gets us to 467. And here's the whole chunk that gets us up to 510. All right. And so they're all lined up. So how do we start to make sense of this? First off, you might notice a lot of these, see, these all have ends all the way down. Every one of these viruses is the same, and they're all eyes. So what if we put a black box over every place? There's 100% sequence homology, meaning they're the same. It looks like this. So all these black spots in here, every one of these viruses has the exact same amino acid in that position. So it says they're highly conserved. All right. So now some things start to jump out at us a little bit, and we start to notice a few things, but I'm going to focus it down even more tightly, and I'm going to get rid of all but SARS-CoV-2 and this pangolin coronavirus. And here we notice how similar these two are. All the black spots tell us they're exactly identical and across all the viruses. And here are the red. Look at these five red binding positions. They're identical. FF. QQ, SS, NN, LL, 100% identical between the pangolin coronavirus and SARS-CoV-2. And as well, you probably notice that they're identical here too, and here, and they're identical all across here, and they're identical here, and here, and here, and here, and they're identical here. Actually, all of this is identical, 100% identical, through the highly conserved and the really important receptor binding domain. 100% identical, 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 the same, the same, the same, the same, all the way the same. And these yellow ones are critical. These are amino acids that fold up right next to the receptor binding domain amino acids. So they're also very important, but 100% conserved. So this whole part down here, 100% the same across the all critical RBD, the receptor binding domain, and across the whole rest of the chain leading up to that, there are only four places where there are mutation differences. This A is a T, this R is a T, this K is an R, this I is a V. Otherwise, 100% the same except for these four tiny changes that are pretty far away from the all critical receptor binding domain. So this is what they found. They said, wow, look how close this stuff is to the pangolin. This SARS-CoV-2 is really close to the pangolin, so it must have come through a pangolin, okay? Now, let's get to the bizarre conclusion from this paper. Very bizarre conclusion. Really odd. So, the occurrence of, this is what they say in their discussion conclusion of this paper. The occurrence of either recombination and/or convergent evolution further highlights the role played by intermediate animal hosts in human virus emergence. Importantly, however, all the pangolin coronaviruses identified to date lack the insertion of a polybasic furin cleavage site in the spike protein that distinguishes human SARS-CoV-2 from related beta coronaviruses, including rat TG13, and not which may have, which absolutely helped to facilitate its emergence and rapid spread through human populations. So they go all through this whole thing and they're like, oh, look, they could have got this from a pangolin and this is it. That's it. That's the entire thing that they talk about. Again, just like that other Nature paper that those other people did, they skip right over this, whoops, here's this polybasic furin cleavage site that just showed up. Hey, it just showed up. But we're just going to point that out and just say, that's how it's probably important, but we don't have any explanation for that. So we're just going to skip right over it, right? That's a crime of omission. There ought to be a big discussion about this saying, how did that get there? That's really odd. And get this, to date, pangolins are the only mammals other than bats documented to be infected by a SARS-CoV-2 related coronavirus. It is striking that two related lineages of coves are found in pangolins independently sampled in different Chinese provinces and that both are also related to SARS-CoV-2. This suggests that these animals may be important hosts for these viruses, which is surprising as pangolins are solitary animals with relatively small population sizes reflecting their endangered status. Yeah, that is surprising because somehow a bat carrying exactly the rat TG13 virus has to get near a pangolin, which has nothing to do with bats. They live in different places. They got different lifestyles, and there's not that many of these pangolins. And then that virus would have to get in there, infect the pangolin, somehow do a magic recombination dealy-bob, and then somehow that pangolin then has to come out and infect a human while also gaining a polybasic furin cleavage site. That's what we're supposed to believe. The most compelling thing you could possibly do after you investigate all of this is to come forward and say, hence, SARS-CoV-2 was not derived from rat TG13, must have come from a pangolin. I don't know how you get to that conclusion. There's no hence there. All right, now we got to turn really quickly to that CBS 60 Minutes thing. I told you I was going to tear it apart a little bit. Here's a little more from that. Let's listen in, and there's three assertions that are made. We're going to have to tear these apart one by one. Let's start here. All right, come on. Where's my arrow? There we go.
Dr. Elodie Gaydin is studying the genome of the virus in her lab at New York University.
People have been saying that's an engineered virus, and it's not. And we know that by looking at the genetic information, looking at the code, and the code tells you a lot.
Human-engineered viruses have common and obvious genetic components, including the virus's overall molecular structure called its backbone. Number one.
If a virus had been engineered, it would have used the backbones that we know, and there's none of that in that virus. And let's say it was a brand new backbone, well, it wouldn't look like what it's looking like, because we can find every piece of that virus. We can find these pieces in other very similar viruses that circulate in the wild. From the genetic information, it's clearly not an engineered virus.
So those are the three claims. First, claim one, human-engineered viruses have common and obvious genetic components. That is, fiddling with a virus's genes, it leaves fingerprints or some other telltale identifiable changes. Two, Gaydin says, if the virus had been engineered, it would have used the backbones that we know about, and there's none of that, okay? It's a very strong assertion there. And three, we can find every piece of that virus. We can find these pieces and other very similar viruses that circulate in the wild. It's very clearly not an engineered virus. So let's start with claim one. Human-engineered viruses have common and obvious genetic components. That is, if you fiddle around and you take these things apart and put them back together, you're going to leave nucleotide residues that are going to be places where you can say, aha, that was an insertion site. Somebody monkeyed around with that. So let's look at claim number one. This is from 2002. This is a paper with Ralph Baric, who's one of the key virus monkeyers out there. This systematic assembly of a full-length infectious cDNA of a mouse hepatitis virus strain A59, boring title, but some really non-boring thing going on in here. Let's look here. A novel method was developed to assemble a full-length infectious clone DNA of group 2 coronavirus mouse hepatitis strain, okay, MHV, mouse hepatitis strain. That's a coronavirus. It's a full-length infectious clone, clone DNA. 7 contiguous cDNA clones that span the 31.5 kilobytes, so that's larger than the coronavirus we're currently dealing with, so they can do this on something of the same size, were isolated. The ends of the cDNAs were engineered with unique junctions and assembled with only the adjacent cDNA subclones, resulting in an intact construct. The interconnecting restriction site junctions that are located at the ends of each cDNA are systematically removed during the assembly of the complete full-length cDNA product, allowing reassembly without the introduction of nucleotide changes. There it is. Without the introduction of nucleotide changes. Remember, it's 2002. This is 18 years ago. We already had the capability of engineering human engineering viruses that leave no fingerprints, have no common and obvious genetic components. That was back in 2002. Guess what? The technology's really improved enormously. Here's what they did in that 2002 paper. Here they had all these big chunks and fragments. They cleaved them, they put together. But they're kind of proud of what they did. So no evidence, they said, when they're talking about this picture up here. And this is a picture of the entire genome of this whole virus right here, from 0 to 31 kilobytes in length. That's the kilobyte marker there. Here are the fragments that they stitched together. And when they did that, they said no evidence of this ESP site is a restriction enzyme site that comes in and cuts it at this very specific pattern of nucleotides up here. No evidence of the site that has been engineered to the component clones should remain in the assembled product. They called it their no-see-em technology. See that? See what they did there? No-see-em? That's their no-see-em technology. They're proud of it. So they're talking about the fact that they were able to put this thing back together without any evidence of the restriction sites being left in the final product that they ran through. All right. Claim number 2. Well, if the virus had been engineered, it would have used the backbones that we know, and there's none of that. This is actually a really funny little claim here, because this is saying, well, if somebody did manufacture this, if they did just sort of make this from, they would have started with some building blocks that we know about. And they didn't start with those building blocks, so therefore it wasn't engineered. All right. First up, we got to know something. A chimeric virus. What's a chimera? Chimera is, in ancient mythology, a chimeric animal would have the head of one animal and the body of another. Maybe a body of a horse and the head of a lion or something like that, right? That's a chimera. So a chimeric virus takes different pieces from different viruses and plunks them together. How long has that been going on? Well, forever. Here's from 2013. Chimeric viruses blur the borders between major groups of viruses. Here's yellow fever and Japanese encephalitis. So two different viruses put together into a chimeric form. Virus chimeras for gene therapy back from 2012. This is from 1999, by the way. The coronavirus here says maybe it could be a chimera of two different viruses. So it's got two different pieces. Virus chimeras for gene therapy and stuff from 2012. Hey, look, you can generate an influenza A virus with a chimeric type AB. So you put A virus and B virus together. How about a chimeric dengue virus vaccine? How about construction of intertypic chimeric dengue viruses and chimera virus constructed for potential new lymphoma treatments, blah, 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 on and on and on and on. All you just type chimeric virus and you'll get page after page of this. This has been like a big area of monkeying around. So no, you don't have to start with a specific backbone. You can actually take a piece of one virus and put a piece of a different virus with it and create a new one. And that work has been going on for many, many decades. All right. So continuing on to debunk number 2, like, it's entirely possible that COVID-19 matches a chimeric rat TG13 and a pangolin virus. So let's say it had the rat TG13 backbone. We had most of that. But then we take this backbone motif right here. I mean, it's the receptor binding motif here from pangolin. And then we have to add in a poly basic furin cleavage site. Is it possible that those things could be done in the lab? Yeah, they're done all the time. Exactly that sort of work. All the time. I can give you dozens of papers where each one of these things has happened. And so taking a look at this, let's look now at COVID-19. This is a similarity to SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19 compared to all these other viruses. And so if it says a number like 100, it means it's exactly 100% identical in every respect to the amino acid sequence of this other virus. And so here you could see, you could make a strong case to say, well, where would I, what would I do? Well, I might take RAT-TG13 for 1AB that's got 96.2, or maybe I'll take pangolin 1, I don't know. But I'm definitely going to take this 98% homology similarity here to 1A from RAT-TG13. I like this 99.3 for 1B out of pangolin 1. That feels good to me. We'll take that there. Let's see, 97.3. We'll take the RAT-TG13 there. And, let's take the 97.8 for this and so on. So you can see how you can grab these different pieces and get very, very close to what we already saw. So, well, that's close, but it's not all the way. And wouldn't it take, how long does it take nature to get to, you know, 97% to get that back up to 100%? How long would it take to mutate this in nature? Well, it would take decades to mutate this. But you know what doesn't take decades? Putting forcing evolution in the lab. So you create a chimera, right? You take the RTG13 backbone. You take the pangolin receptor binding domain. You cleave in a quick polybasic furin cleavage site. And then you do serial passages in cell culture. So these are cells that are capable of being infected. And you do that and do that and do that. And remember, as this thing is mutating in this cell culture, you know what's going to happen? The viruses that are better at infecting and at better at crossing that barrier and getting into that cell and better at replicating once they're in the cell, those are going to be the viruses that get amplified, and those are going to be the ones that you're going to be selecting for. So you would do a bunch of serial passages of this, and then you'd put it in vivo modeled and put it in a bunch of serial passages in vivo, and you'd be watching, and this virus would be getting better and better and better at what it's doing, and eventually you'd end up with something like COVID-19. Science fiction? Well, actually, that's already been done for influenza. They took an influenza that was absolutely not contagious for humans, did this exact process with it, and came up with one that was wildly contagious in humans, and did that in a lab, and that created the first original shutdown of the gain-of-function research back in 2014. That's when that paper, you know, people came out and said, that's wrong. That was not cool. So whether it's natural or not, listen, I'm willing, if you got different data, if the data changes, I'll change my mind. But there's two possibilities out there. The natural, here's the natural argument. A bat manages to pass a coronavirus, maybe RAT-TG13, to a pangolin that's already infected with this pangolin 1 virus, and one of only a few thousand pangolins left out in the world anywhere. So somehow this bat had to find one of just a few pangolins, and then a critical translation error swapped the RAT-TG13 receptor binding domain with that from pangolin 1, and then that one virus particle, it leaves the pangolin somewhere, goes out, picks up a PRRA, polybasic furin cleavage site from some other virus. We don't know which one, maybe another one. I saw somebody saying, oh, it got it clearly from HKU, this other virus. So it had to go back into a bat. So according to that story, the bat gives it to pangolin, who gives it back to a bat. And then that one bat creates that one virus particle. And then miracle of all miracles, that manages to latch onto a human host who then goes to Wuhan, and the rest is history. That's a story. Okay, here's a different one. In the lab, somebody was mucking around in a lab using techniques proven out over and over 20 years ago, and then since refined and created COVID-19. And then some sort of accident happened at the Wuhan Institute of Virology on or about October 6th to 11th. And here we are. That's it. Those are the two stories. One of these, when you say, you know, unfounded speculation, here's how you found your speculation. You found your speculation on the fact that these sorts of things are done all the time. This is founding it on the idea that in 2002, we had no-see-um technology, which has only gotten better. This is founded on the idea that you can leave no traces. This is founded on the idea that this receptor binding domain has 100% homology with pangolins, but it has really high homology with RAT-TG13 in other places. It's a chimera. It's two viruses put together. And guess what? Humans have been putting chimeras together for a long time. This would be exactly the sort of thing you would do if you were monkeying in a virus lab. And oh, by the way, the most important question, The most important question, where did that polybasic furin cleavage site come from? That's the smoking gun in this story. And one of the ways I know it's the smoking gun is because when these people write these giant, long articles about, you know, how this had to have come from a pangolin, and then they just skip right over. They're like, yeah, however, all the pangolin coronaviruses identified to date lack the insertion of a polybasic furin-like cleavage site, and so do all the other ones in the bat coronaviruses. Hey, let's keep moving on. Right? They just skip right over it. Like, hey, come on, Bucky, slow up. Let's talk about that polybasic furin cleavage site again real quick. Could be because that seems to me like it's the smoking gun. All right, here are the conclusions for today. There is no possible way to definitively state this virus came from nature. And anybody who says that at this stage is espousing a belief, they're not being factual, or they're just flat out lying. Okay? And I expect my evolutionary biologist, virologist types to understand all about this sort of work that's been done back in 2002 and all of the chimeric viruses. And I would expect for this woman, I would expect for Elodie to say, look, something like this. I really don't want to believe that it's true that this could have come from a lab, but honestly, it could have. We've been using chimeric viruses for a long time. We don't have any particular chimeric viruses anywhere in the published literature that match this. So based on what's published, there's nothing in here to support that this came from a lab. However, I will tell you that it's not entirely unthinkable that military labs would have unpublished sequences, whether those military labs were in China or in the United States or over at Portendown in the UK or any of a dozen other places, maybe in Russia. Who knows? Are there unpublished viral sequences that have been experimented with in military labs all over the world? Of course there are. And we don't know about those. But, you know, that they should have to make a qualified statement, but instead said flat out, it's very clearly not an engineered virus. And you can't say that based on the data. The data says you can engineer a virus any way you want. The data says you could put a chimeric virus together. The data says that you might do it with a backbone of the RTG and a pangolin RBD, both of which are published, right, and are known about. And by the way, this paper did just come out in February. It was submitted for publication, just came out in March. But the pangolins in question, those were actually sampled, I believe, back in 2017. So plenty of time for somebody. And by the way, they're sampled in China by Chinese people. So there's a good chance that this exact pangolin thing right here that we were looking at that has 100% sequence homology in the R receptor binding domain, that was in the WIV for a couple of years. Plenty of time for somebody to sequence it and begin monkeying around with it, of course. All right, and we also know the Wuhan Virology Institute of Virology, I got that backwards, WIV, went cell phone dark between October 6th and 11th. Like to know what that was all about, of course, and with roadblocks and everything, I think we deserve some answers. And by the way, scientists have been creating chimeric viruses with polybasic furin and other protease cleavage sites for decades. It's part of standard part of virus research for gain of function, especially, but also cross species jumping and things like that. If you said, Chris, in the balance between selecting, you have to choose, you have to put money down, natural versus not. Occam's razor says not natural. This is just a much simpler, easier thing for me to get my head around than this whole crazy string that has to happen here. Bat to a pangolin, back to a bat, into a human, blah, blah, blah. It's not impossible. You said if I had to pick, if it's a roulette wheel, I think this roulette wheel has twice as many red little trays in it than it does little black trays for the marble to fall into. So that's how I put all that stuff together. Those are the conclusions from that. Remember, you got to resubscribe to this channel because people get unsubscribed because I say uncomfortable stuff like this, like, hey, these people might be lying. And somehow that annoys people. I don't understand it. You should be able to defend your stuff anytime you want with actual data and not making baseless assertions and things like that. In the meantime, I think that all of this is really about to get a little funky out there in the world. I do believe that there's a lot of reasons for you to become prepared and resilient. We talk about 8 forms of capital at peak prosperity. That's in our book. You get a free download of the book if you want the PDF. Adam and I spent a lot of time writing that. I think it's a good book. Talks about 8 forms of capital. One of them is living capital. A portion of that would be reflected in the garden that you grow. Of course, your body, the terrain that you keep there. So please keep your immune system up. This virus isn't going away. I don't think we're going to get a vaccine anytime soon. Heck, there are zero vaccines right now for any coronaviruses, so it would be a real miracle if we got one for this one in just 12 to 18 months. So I think this is going to be with us for a good long time. So you're going to want to make sure that your immune system is top-notch and eating good food and also making sure you have the right supplements in case you will happen to be eating other foods which are deficient. And that's one of the things we know about our food supply now. It is deficient in many of the trace minerals and vitamins and macronutrients that we actually need to stay healthy. All right, that was kind of a long one today. If you made it all the way this far, congratulations. Thank you very much for listening. I had to get that off my chest. It's been burning for a while, but I hate illogical arguments, and that's what I think a lot of these virologists are tossing around. I think they need to soften up their approach and be a little bit more humble and leave a little doubt that maybe this could have come from a lab, and then I would find their arguments more convincing. As it is, their certainty makes me very suspicious. With that, we'll talk to you again tomorrow. All right, everyone, take care. Bye.
Hi, folks. Adam Taggart, co-founder of Peak Prosperity, here with good news. In his daily videos, Chris often refers to the book that he and I wrote, Prosper: How to Prepare for the Future and Create a World Worth Inheriting. It presents a practical model for living with greater resilience, and those who read it and followed its advice were much better prepared for the coronavirus outbreak than the average household. Given its heightened relevance to the turbulent times we now find ourselves in, Chris and I want everyone to benefit from this book's formula for better, more secure living. So we're giving the book to you for free. To get your copy, simply visit peakprosperity.com/freebook. We think you'll find this an extremely valuable and inspiring resource for the current COVID-19 outbreak and for being well-positioned for any kind of crisis that comes our way in the future. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.